Yes, it is that time of the week, and I'm joined by Dr. David Tabrett today. Good afternoon.
G'day, Amanda.
Lovely to have you. Now, no Cheryl today?
No. Someone's got to keep the home fires burning.
That's right.
Well, the work fires, I believe.
That's
so
right. That's
good
right.
on you, Cheryl.
So we'll see Cheryl next week. But we're going to talk about, now let me get this right, glaucoma today.
Mm. You might have heard it in people, but our dogs can get it as well.
Right. So I always thought it was glaucoma. Is that a different thing, or have I just got it wrong the whole time?
Oh, glaucoma might be when you accidentally put super glue in your eyes.
Yeah, I think that's it.
No, but we can talk about glaucoma in a bit more detail, and perhaps there's even some of our listeners have had an experience with their dogs developing this very painful eye condition.
Okay. Well, if you've got a question about glaucoma, or anything else, we're going to start talking about glaucoma.
Glaucoma, yeah. Thanks, Amanda. Glaucoma. Now, people may have heard of this, certainly in relation to their own or a person's health, and our dogs can get this problem too, and also cats, but I'll touch on that in a second. So glaucoma, what is it? It's actually a disease that basically is characterised by increased pressure of fluid inside the eye. Now, the eye, as we may know, has, you know, surrounding tissues. It's got the pupil, or rather it's got the iris. The pupil is just the space in the middle of the iris that we look through, and then the lens, and then the retina in the back of the eye. But in between all of those structures is fluid. Now, in the back of the eye, it's called the vitreous humor. Don't ask me why it's called humor. But that fluid is more like a jelly. But in the front of the eye, it's more of a liquid, okay? And so it's constantly being produced. Now, if for some reason we're either overproducing or we can't drain that fluid out of the eye, and there's mechanisms in the around the iris, the coloured part of the eye, where there's actually absorption of that fluid, and that keeps everything healthy. Now, if you think about it, the cornea, the clear part of the eye at the front, it doesn't have any blood vessels, so it needs constant fluid circulating on both sides. So on the inside, it's what we call the aqueous humor. On the outside, it's tears to provide oxygen to the cells to keep the eye clear. But for some reasons, we can see primary glaucoma, which is where there's a malfunction of the drainage. And basically, it's like the drain is got blocked in the eye. And so there are certain breeds that this is more likely to happen. Now, classically, Bassets are probably the breed that we might see the most with glaucoma, but also Cocker Spaniels, Australian Cattle Dogs, Fox Terriers, Poodles, Maltese Terriers, Golden Retrievers can all develop what we call primary glaucoma. And they will become acutely blind, have a painful red eye, and the front of the eye can go quite bluish as well. So this is a very, very significant problem because, as I mentioned, they can go blind. And once that happens, the clock's ticking. They can end up losing the eye or losing their vision permanently. So the way that we recognise it is we use a tool that's called a tonometer, which measures the pressure in the eye. Now, in the old days, it was a bit of a contraption involving weights and all sorts of things. But nowadays, we use these tools. The tonometer is just fires a little blunt probe at the eye and can measure the pressure. And there is even a version of a tonometer that actually just uses a puff of air on the eye and is able to then determine the pressure inside the eye. And if it goes above a certain level, which is the measure that we use is 20, if it goes above 20, but normally it should be, 15 or a bit lower, then we've got some problems. And the way that we treat it in an emergency situation is we may have to actually drain some of the fluid out of the eye with a needle. Obviously, that sounds a bit gruesome. But in some cases, then surgery is quite helpful and can get these guys working again. If it's left for any period of time, and I mentioned the clock is ticking, so we're only talking a couple of days in some circumstances or even shorter hours, then what happens is the pressure starts to push back into the eye and can actually put pressure on the retina and cut off blood supply to the retina and the optic nerve. So if those sort of things happen, then the dog is left with a blind eye that actually doesn't do anything and is painful. And in those cases, we have to remove the eye.
Ooh.
And just very quickly to finish, I mentioned cats. Now, they rarely get primary glaucoma, but both dogs and cats can develop secondary. So this is where there's scarring in the eye, in that drainage angle where the fluid normally goes through. And if they have some sort of injury or inflammation in the eye, they can actually end up with secondary glaucoma. And so then we have to treat the glaucoma, plus we have to treat the original condition as well. So hopefully none of our listeners have had that experience. I know by just listing off the breeds that there will be quite a few people who are probably familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly anytime you have problems with your pets with their eyes, best to get them seen to very, very quickly.
Good advice. Heather from Barnsley is on the line. Thanks for holding, Heather. Now, you haven't got an eye problem. You've got a five-month-old puppy with blood in its stool.
Yes. It only happened yesterday, and she done one normal because trying to catch her to get her to do it outside. Anyway, it was in the bedroom, and then I wiped it up, and then the other little doggy came along and was sniffing, and I went, oh, my God, here's another one. And that when I looked at that one, it was mucus and blood.
Mm.
So, but she hasn't had one since.
So what breed is your little one, Heather?
She's Italian Whippet.
Oh, okay. Quite a little thing then.
Yeah.
Now, do you have any other animals?
Yeah, I've got two poodles.
And they're much older?
Yeah, Dolly's 18 months old and the other one's going on 17.
Okay. Now, your little pup, is she vaccinated?
Yeah.
And is she otherwise well?
Yeah, fit as a fiddle, can't catch her. She runs like a rocket.
Oh, okay.
And I've never known a little doggy to poo so many times in a day, about five or six times.
Well, that may be a clue. Well, it may be a clue to what's going on, and certainly a couple of the things. And I asked the question about vaccination first of all and her general health because first time I hear that there's, bleeding in the stool, then we're going to be worried about parvovirus because it's a virus that attacks the gut lining and can cause that. But we can't completely rule it out just on that. What you've told me so far, but there are a number of other causes that are probably more likely. If they've eaten a particularly abrasive diet, that could cause some damage to the bowel and a bit of bleeding. But the mucus along with it, I'm just thinking, and the frequency that you mentioned, that we do have some degree of acute diarrhea and acute gastrointestinal upset. Parasites are the next thing I'd be worried about. So we worry about things like hookworm,
yep.
Roundworm, and in addition to that, we also have to think about some intracellular parasites or very small Cryptosporidium is a single cell bacterium that can also infect the bowel and cause inflammation. So
right.
A couple of those things, certainly in a five-month-old and particularly a small breed like an Italian Whippet, I would be thinking probably best to get off to the vet and get her checked before she starts to, suffer any further effects because
right.
It works two ways as well. The thing with the bowel is, so if you damage the lining of the bowel, you'll start to bleed and you'll notice the blood come out. But the other thing that happens is bacteria can now get in through the bowel wall into the bloodstream and cause further problems. And that's what we call bacterial translocation. And that can actually start to lead to problems like sepsis, things like liver disease, things, problems like that. Now, I'm probably over-dramatising. Please, these things aren't that common. And a lot of dogs will bounce back from an episode like this. But in a five-month-old, we want to make sure our worming is all up to date. Yeah. And if you take a sample into your vets, they'll be able to look at it under the microscope.
Oh, okay.
And probably get a fair picture of what's going on. The other one I'm just recalling, sorry, is parasitic disease is coccidia. That's probably the more common one.
the others catch it off her?
Yes, or she's caught it off them, but they're asymptomatic because
they don't leave the yard. They never go out of the yard.
Yeah. A lot of these diseases are just simply go through the gut, end up on the grass, and then get back into the next dog that comes along. So if we do find something like coccidia, if we do find parasites like worms, then everybody's going to need to be treated.
Right, okay.
So if good idea to take a sample and get the vets to have a look at that. They'll be able to diagnose it under the microscope.
Okey-doke.
All right.
And we did have another poodle that had to have her eye out from that.
Oh, from glaucoma?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, it's a nasty problem.
Yeah, it was. She was in so much pain. She used to sit in the corner, not say a word, just sat in the corner. And then I looked and the eye was just all of a sudden just swelled up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the story we sometimes hear. So, yeah sorry to hear that. But hopefully this little one is going to bounce back. We'll get things checked out and get back on track.
Thanks for your call, Heather. Appreciate it. Next on the line, we have Mark from New Lambton. Hi, Mark. How can we help?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you could help me out with the little dog that we have. It's a Shih Tzu Maltese cross.
Yep.
And its stomach seems to be expanding, and it's very thirsty a lot of the times.
And have you had your little one since a pup?
Yes, it was the run of the litter, and we'd made some sort of looking into it, and would Cushing's disease be something to think about?
That is number one on my list.
Okay.
Number one on my list. So there are a number of, first of all, when you said wants to drink a lot of water, first rule is make sure she can drink a lot of water.
Yep.
Just make sure there's multiple water sources. Now, the reason I say that is the two things aren't linked. She's not drinking the water and then it's ending up in her stomach, and that's what's making her stomach get bigger. So by restriction, if you kind of looked at it and went, well, if we keep the water away from her, then maybe the stomach will shrink. It doesn't work like that. What happens is that there's something going on that's causing increased thirst, and then there's something that's also causing the stomach to get bigger.
Okay.
So Cushing's is certainly the primary one I'd be thinking of. There are a couple of other diseases, including diabetes is a possibility, but certainly Cushing's.
Okay.
And the reason why we see this happening and the symptoms that you've described is Cushing's syndrome is due to an increase in cortisol levels in the body, and cortisol has marvelous thing, but too much is no good for you. But it has a number of effects. And so one of the effects that we're seeing, the drinking related thing, is that she's actually probably urinating a lot more, and the drinking is trying to catch up. Okay. And then the stomach expanding is because cortisol causes muscles to weaken. And so it actually starts to, the muscles that hold the abdomen start to stretch a bit more. In addition to that, cortisol also makes the liver get bigger.
Oh, okay.
Because it causes fat to deposit into the liver. So now you've got a bigger liver, the muscles are a bit weaker, and the belly just flops, kind of thing. Okay.
And the dog gets heavier and bigger.
Heavier and bigger, and wants to drink more, and then wants to eat more, and then wants to, yeah. So, and it can be a pretty nasty downward spiral. So that would certainly be my first thing that I'd want to rule out. But generally a workup or a diagnostic pathway involving some blood tests and urine tests, looks at everything, looks at that liver function, looks at the kidney function, and looks at that hormonal disease, Cushing's, for instance, and tries to work out which are the problems and what's the explanation that draws all of those together.
Is it treatable?
Yes. Yeah. There's so we've talked on the show over the past 15 years or so quite a few times about Cushing's. So there is actually two different forms of disease. So one is where there's an increase in cortisol because there is a tumour in the adrenal gland, And the other one is where there's a tumour in the pituitary gland. They're called microadenomas in the pituitary gland in the brain, and it actually just keeps pumping out the stimulus for the adrenal glands to produce cortisol. And normally there's a feedback loop. So our bodies do this, and there's a feedback, and then it says, okay, shut down production. But if you've got this microadenoma in your pituitary gland, it just says, nah, we'll just keep pumping this out. And that's how you end up with excess cortisol. And then the treatments involve, depending on what's going on, most commonly what we're doing is we're trying to block the effect of cortisol in the tissue, because it's the signs that you're seeing is due to the action of the cortisol.
Okay. So is that with tablets and drugs or...?
Yeah, there are some newer treatments that are actually very effective and will prolong the duration and the quality of life. And it is a daily tablet, though, for the rest of the life with some regular monitoring. So it's just getting that diagnosis right so we know exactly what it is that we're treating.
Okay, and that's the probably finding out what sort of level of treatment you need too, is it?
Yeah, that's correct. So as I said, we would look at a couple of blood tests. What tends to happen is we do what's called a hormone stimulus test, where we actually inject a hormone into the body and then we measure the cortisol level before and after. That kind of helps us then say, okay, yes, it's we're definitely diagnosing this correctly, and then the treatment can follow that. Because if we give the treatment without having that test done, we could be making things a lot worse.
Yeah, I understand. But what sort of quality of life are we expecting after the treatment? Is it much change for the dog?
Pretty much better than what you've got now, because cortisol, as I said, it has an effect on that muscle in the belly, but it also has an effect on muscles around things like the spine and the legs. And so they actually start to get weakness, they're tired all the time, that sort of thing. So a lot of dogs actually start to improve quite a bit and go back to, you know, people say to me, oh, it's like we've taken a back 5 years. They can really improve their quality of life. Things like arthritis can sometimes appear a bit worse after you start treatment, and that's because the cortisol in the body was actually masking the effects of the arthritis. So sometimes we've got that, we kind of go, now she's running around, but now she's sore in her hips or something. And she was always sore in her hips. It was just that the cortisol was blocking that pain signal. So
she wasn't running around.
No, well, exactly. That's true. That as well. So no, it's okay. worthwhile pursuing. And as I said, not just quality of life, but also the duration.
Okay, all the best with that, Mark. Good luck. Got Joan on the line from Caves Beach. Hi, Joan. How can we help you?
Hello. Yes, I have a 3-month-old Chihuahua puppy, and she eats her poop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Do you have any other dogs?
We do. We also have a 2-year-old Chihuahua.
Okay. All right. So where is this happening, Joan?
Well, she's still toilet training, so wherever she poops, on her wee mats or outside.
Okay. And what about the other dog? What does it do? It doesn't do any of that behaviour, does it?
No, he just goes outside and, yeah he doesn't do, never done that.
Probably two things straight away. One is, a lot of dogs will do this early and then just grow out of it, just stop it. However, in the process, or I was going to say a lot, but not all, because some of them could decide, they'll just keep doing that forever. And it raises a couple of problems that we briefly touched on with Heather earlier about, you know, parasites and infections and worms and things like that. That it increases the risk of disease, apart from the whole aesthetic of it. So from a health perspective, as much as anything else, we need to, you know, minimise this happening. Now, have you done anything about this so far or tried?
I've spoken to the vet about it, and they basically just said, oh, it's normal, but didn't offer really any other solutions. But we have just recently had her wormed, and she's had her injections and so on.
Oh, great.
So she's due for another worming tablet.
How long have you had her for?
Since she was 9 weeks old. So we've had her about...
3 weeks?
Three, 4 weeks.
Yep. Now, have you done puppy preschool with her, or has she started that at all?
No, we are just about to start. We had to wait for her second vaccination, which she had last week.
Yep.
So I am about to get her signed up for that.
Oh, that'd be great. I think that's a really good opportunity to explore a lot of these types of questions, not only this one, but sometimes there's little bits of advice. I guess the bottom line is we don't really have a good answer for this behaviour. One of the things that we kind of, you know, people will say about, oh, put stuff in their food or sprinkle something on their poo so they won't eat it. I don't understand why we say that, because if you're going to do that, you just pick it up, wouldn't you? Like, so,
yes,
you know.
Just pick it up.
Yeah. And also, it's a little bit hit and miss about putting stuff in their food and thinking that that's going to change the behaviour. I mean, sometimes it works, and sometimes, most of the time, it doesn't make a difference. You know, dogs will often clean in their environment, and that they're kind of limited to what they can do. They can't pull out a mop and wipe everything down. So they will do this. Also, the mother will do this behaviour as a way of keeping the environment clean when they've had pups. So sometimes they'll see that happening at a very young age and then adopt that behaviour themselves. So there's a whole lot of reasons to see it as a normal behaviour. My thoughts are to minimise it rather than, you know, we're not going to stop it as such, but to minimise it by making sure we clean up as quickly as possible. And I think also using some behavioural tactics or techniques where we're distracting the dog, if you think that's what it's doing. Like, for instance, if you know when they go to the toilet, they kind of whip around and want to start eating it, then I'd be taking them to the toilet on a lead and then also getting them to do something for you afterwards, like just come to you, give them a treat. So it's something obviously a bit more tasty than what they might have feasted on if left to their own devices, just so that you can say, look, the normal behaviour is, or at least the behaviour in this house is, we don't do that, so come over here, I'll give you a treat. And then they're forgotten about, oh yeah, that's what I was going to do. So that's going to come with the puppy preschool as well, not just for this, but for a lot of things where we want to get dogs to look to you for the reward. And, you know, we use food in the first instance because it's a very primal behaviour that is very, very positive. We don't, you know, use or condone negative behaviour feedback, as in we're not smacking dogs. No, I haven't heard this said for a long time, but I'm going to say it now. We don't rub their noses in it.
No.
Because I'm thinking all that does is make them, oh, that's tasty. And now I can lick it off my nose. It's all about positive. It's about getting them to focus on you as a distraction from what they might otherwise be doing, and otherwise just clean up as frequently and as quickly as you can.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Give it a shot.
Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck.
We've got Rodney from Birmingham Gardens on the line. Hi, Rodney. You've got a dog with cataracts.
Yes, mate. A little Shih Tzu Maltese.
Yeah.
He's 13.
Right.
And it breaks my heart, you know, like we'll bring him to work. He gets his little high vis on. He comes to work with us and all sorts of things. He comes everywhere with us, and it's sad to watch him in a house that he's not familiar with, just run into walls and trip over things. You know what I mean? It breaks your heart to watch it. So he doesn't come to work anymore. It's broken his heart, but he gets angry with me. But I'm pretty sure the cataracts, it's got the milkiness and everything.
Yeah, there's how long has he had the problem for?
I reckon probably 18 months, a bit more.
Oh, okay.
But what's on my mind is that we're moving into a new property, new house that we're building.
Okay.
And he's going to have troubles planning that house out and knowing where he is and where the steps are and what have you, you know?
Yeah, I think definitely need to use baby gates and limit the space, obviously, and particularly with verandas or even a low porch can be a problem if they fall feet.
I think he's probably around 70% gone.
Right. So you think he's still got a bit of vision?
Is it too late to have anything done?
It depends. Like, you can have the cataracts removed. There's a lot of reasons to have cataracts removed. It's very difficult to say whether he would still have vision. So if we go back to the earlier discussion.
He still has vision.
It just depends because the cataracts are actually quite hard. So normally the lens in the eye, which sits behind the iris, the coloured part of the eye, the lens sits back there. And normally it's kind of a softer jelly feeling. But it with a cataract, it becomes deformed and it gets quite hard. And when it does that, it actually can fall or put pressure backwards, as I was saying, into this vitreous jelly, and that presses on the retina, and that's what can lead to permanent blindness with them. Whether it's too late or not, it may well make him more comfortable because cataracts can be painful. And so when we said treatment,
That's why maybe he's rubbing his face all the time.
Mm. Oh, yeah, definitely.
He's rubbing his face. You know, even when I give him a scratch, he puts his nose and his eyes towards my hand.
Yeah,
wants me to scratch all that, you know?
Yeah, it may be painful. And it's worth an assessment anyway. You're best to actually speak to your vet about seeing a veterinary ophthalmologist. Because they'll be able to do the full assessment.
You wouldn't be able to give me sort of like a ballpark figure, you know, like 2,000, 4,000, 5,000?
Oh, in terms of costs associated? Yeah. Well, I think it's more of a whole assessment because, you know, there may be that surgery isn't the best option, but it's worth just having a consult and find out what your options are.
Well, I'm in pain, you know?
Yeah, you're going to be looking at in the thousands if it was a surgical repair. For sure. I mean, the techniques that are involved are very similar to humans with operating microscopes and things like that. So it's pretty specialised stuff, very microscopic.
It's a big decision for the simple fact that he's 13.
Yes.
And you know yourself that the Maltese Shih Tzus, they have heart problems, right? He's coughing, he's on heart meds for fluid and all this. He's on three different meds.
Right.
And he's 13, right? Now I've got to work out, is it worth spending $3,000-$4,000 to have his eye fixed if he's only going to last another 12 months?
Well, I think I would be wanting to have that assessment, which is not going to cost you those thousands at least anyway, and then just say, okay, what are our options given all of these things, given the heart disease, as you said, then I would be thinking, well, if we don't want to go down the surgical path, are there other treatments that we could be looking at? And I think that's going to give you a better result in the long term either way. You know, even if you didn't have the heart disease, you might even be thinking about not surgery for that older dog for you. So it's worth speak to your vet, see if you can get to go and see an ophthalmologist. They'll do the assessment and then you've got all that information to make the best decision for you and your little one.
Okay, good luck with that, Rodney. Thanks for your call. And just to announce our winner for the $50 pet food voucher, congratulations to Joan from Caves Beach. And we've got about a minute or two left, and we're just going to look at our pet of the week. So if you go to 2NURFM.com.au, you'll find our lifestyle section. You can click on the link and you can go to our pet of the week. And we've got Dexter, a 12-month-old Kelpie cross. We've had him before. We had him a couple of months ago, but he's still in care and they're hoping
for the right place.
He is.
But how old is he though, Amanda? Oh, 12 months. 12-month-old. Fairly energetic, I'm going to say.
Mm.
Kelpie cross.
Yep.
So you need a bit of room, you need a bit of time. And still good with kids, for instance, but probably over the age of 6 or 7. And then wants to be also, this one's surprising, wants to also cuddle up inside. Which dog does not
That's
want
right.
to?
Yeah.
Good on you, Dexter. Yeah. I'm hoping, yeah, if anyone's interested, at least have a look on the website and you can get all the details. Microchipped, vaccinated, desexed, of course. So yes, ready to go.
Beautiful looking boy. And quickly, we've got Rhubarb, the cat, 9 month old. Handsome young man, super fluffy coat that is white with black patches on his back and a unique black marking on his face.
And the interesting thing about Rhubarb is he's good with other cats.
Yes.
But are the other cats good with him? Well, got to find out.
That's right. And if possible, Rhubarb has a sister named Pumpkin and would love to be rehomed with her, if possible.
Rhubarb brings his... another cat straight away. Instant family.
That's right. That's right. You get two for, well, maybe not the price of one, but...
two for the price of two.
That's right. Well, that is it for us for Pet Chat. And if you'd like to check out those Pets of the Week, 2NURFM.com.au is the place to go. Dr. David Tabrett, thanks. You very much.
Thanks, and, Amanda.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.